CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. From the surface of the planet Earth, we're headed to Starbase, a.k.a. Boca Chica, Texas. Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black here, and he's going to take us along a theoretical walk behind Elon Musk as he prepares us for the future. Starship, Starlinks, Starbase, and Mars. Bob, a very good evening to you. First of all, Starship, what do we learn from Mr. Musk in his walk and talk?
Yeah, Tim Dodd at Everyday Astronaut, he's done this several times with Elon Musk before, and he did another one. And I've embedded the interview and the tour on Behind the Black, so you can watch it yourself. It's quite fascinating to see Musk talk in detail about this development of Starship. But they did a walk around the base of the various Super Heavy and Starship prototypes that are being prepared right now for their orbital flight. Obviously, it's clear that because they can't launch because of federal intransigence and bureaucracy, they've been doing a lot of work on upgrading and design so that they can be, when they launch, they're better prepared and they've got a better craft to fly. And so I've got that embedded on Behind the Black. Starship is, of course, his 100-ton heavy lift spacecraft launched on Super Heavy that would be equivalent to the Saturn V rocket, except completely reusable. And as Musk pointed out, right now he estimates roughly it's about $1 billion to put a ton of material on the surface of Mars. He hopes Starship can reduce that cost to only $100K. About a 10,000-fold reduction, which Musk admitted in this interview is an insane, that's a quote, insane improvement. But he also said it's entirely possible. He's not breaking any laws of physics, he noted. And so that's the goal of Starship, basically to reduce the cost to get into orbit as well as to get to Mars by a significant amount, by being reusable and reliable and well-built. Using a lot of very special extra things. I include a whole bunch of takeaways from this tour that are really interesting. So those people who are really interested in the detail work, you can go watch the tour itself. One interesting detail, though, is that on that first test flight of Starship, it's an orbital flight. It'll not quite complete an orbit, just simply so they can bring it down safely. But they intend to attempt to deploy some Starlink satellites during that test flight. He also admitted that it's pretty likely the flight will fail. They expect that. This is a prototype test flight, and anything that happens is good, no matter even if the thing fails.
Was there indication where it's going to take place, Bob?
Oh, it's good. Well, no, he didn't talk about the implication from this tour is that it will take place at Boca Chica because we were looking at the prototype. They want to fly orbitally, and that's at Boca Chica. And the tour gave very clear that they haven't slowed down any of their operations at Boca Chica. So though they didn't discuss regulatory issues at all in this tour, it was all mostly engineering and design. The implication was that Musk is very confident that the intransigence and blockage by the Biden administration and the FAA and others will go away when they were in the near future. And I think it will go away because politically it's poison for the Biden administration to be blocking this. It's downright poison. It's killing them.
And
both.
When he says that the Starship will fail, does that mean it'll crash on the ground at Boca Chica?
No. There could be crashes almost anywhere. It could crash during, it could fail at launch, you know, right after they ignite the 39 engines on the Super Heavy, because they've never really done that before. It could have failure during separation of first of the Starship from the Super Heavy. It could fail when they ignite the engines. It could fail in orbit in some manner. It could fail on its way down. It's one of the reasons they're going to take off. They don't plan to land anywhere near the land. They're going to land over the Pacific Ocean, not far from Hawaii, but far enough away to be safe. And those failures will have to do with that. This is a prototype, and if something they've designed isn't quite right, it will fail. And then they will see why that failure occurred, and they will incorporate a correction in the next prototype. And that's the idea.
What is Aerojet Rocketdyne, and why is it using tough language towards an executive?
Rocketdyne Aerodyne is a big space, old space company that specializes in making rocket engines, not other kinds of engines, but rocket engines. They've been in trouble for a bunch of years because a lot of their engines are just very expensive and people buy them from others. However, in the process of their problems, Lockheed Martin attempted late last year to buy Aerojet Rocketdyne for about $4 billion. Well, that purchase failed. The FDA, I think it is, objected to it for a variety of reasons, partially related to the Biden administration's hostility to private enterprise. But in the result, Lockheed Martin canceled the purchase. While that was going on, the CEO of the company was pushing for it, and one of the other board members, their executive their executive chairman, he had worries about whether that merger would go through. He knew it would, but he was hopeful it would, but he was worried about it. And so he started to make inquiries with a variety of people outside the company if they'd be interested in becoming a CEO. In other words, he was working to oust the CEO that was already at the company. And what has happened is the company had specifically told him, the board, that they're not looking for a new CEO, that he was not to talk to anybody outside the company about such a subject, and he was to cease, and he didn't cease. So they now have issued a reprimand for him to say he should cease doing this immediately. He has he's also sued the CEO over this battle. It indicates there are problems at Aerojet Rocketdyne that even though they've been partially solved by a very large contract with ULA for 116 engines, the company needs to get its management structure straightened out, John, without any question.
Long March 3B. Bob, is this the Chinese rocket that crashes to Earth on villagers? And is this the
No. Well, yes, but no. The Long March 3B, well, yes, but no. It's complicated. The Long March 3B is one of their rockets they launch from the interior of China that, yes, their first stages do fall down on land in China and in the past have landed near villages and habitable zones. They try to control that somewhat or at least aim for exclusion zones. They don't allow people in, but nonetheless, they drop it on people's heads in their own country. But this is not the case of the first stage components falling on the ground. This is the second time in a month that the upper stage of a Long March 3B rocket, parts of it, fell in India. In mid-April, some of the interior tanks of the upper stage survived deorbit, didn't burn up, and landed in India and were found. Well, this week, another upper stage inner tanks crashed in India and were found. They fell within a 15-kilometer, about 10-mile radius, all near villages in India. There's pictures at the links that I linked to on Behind the Black of those tanks. They're clearly interior tanks, the kind of helium tanks they use to pressurize the bigger tanks as the fuel or oxidizer exits the tank. And they're made to be, since they're inside a tank filled with, let's say, cold oxygen, they're made very, very strong, and that's why they survived the crash. Both of these incidents suggest China doesn't really care about controlling its spacecraft. Most companies, the upper stages nowadays, they try to set it up so that if any parts of it might hit the ground, the engines fire and they bring it down over the ocean. But that China apparently doesn't bother. And China also, be prepared for more things hitting your head, because in the next 7 months they're going to launch two Long March 5B rockets. That's the one you're most thinking of, John. That's to launch big modules to their space station. And the Long March B is a very powerful rocket, but it's a core stage that reaches orbit. And the core stage up till now, you couldn't turn the engine or you couldn't restart the engine. Once it fired to get the thing in orbit and it was completed its job and it turned off, you couldn't start it again. And so that core stage would be in orbit, but it would be a very unstable orbit that would decay very quickly. And several times previously, that core stage came crashing to the ground in an uncontrolled manner. It could have hit anywhere, including population populated areas. They were lucky it didn't, though some pieces did crash in villages in Africa in May of 2020. They got two more launches of this coming in the next 7 months to put larger modules up on their space station. There are hints that they might have redesigned the engine so they could restart it and control its return to Earth. But those are hints. It's not confirmed, and we're just going to have to wait and see, John.
The Space Tug Company launcher has hired SpaceX Falcon 9 to do what, Bob?
Well, Falcon 9 is a launch rocket. And so Launcher is putting up satellites and a space tug. And so it's going to fly on a Falcon 9. But when it flies, this space tug, they call it Orbiter. It's a tug to move CubeSats into their preferred orbit. And so when that Falcon 9 launches in October, it's going to take a whole bunch of CubeSats into orbit. The orbiter tug of launcher is going to carry on it 10 payloads, six of which will be CubeSats. And what will happen is after it deploys from the Falcon 9, that tug will move those six of those CubeSats to their preferred orbits as a tug, basically moving them around and releasing them. It also has four other payloads that are just going to stay on the tug. Well, what's the story here is that that's the first test flight of this orbiter tug. And yet, Launcher has filled the customer list. They've gotten payloads, CubeSats, to fill that entire flight. So these are some are student CubeSats, others are startup CubeSats from different companies. But nonetheless, what these companies have done is they've gotten a cheap, probably very, very cheap price to put their CubeSat on this experimental test flight on the hope that it'll work and their CubeSat will get into a really good orbit. If it doesn't work, that's life, but you take risks and you save money this way. Means that Launcher, as a company, is really moving ahead fast with its ability to provide tug services to CubeSats in the future. And they've got more flights coming in 23, and they're looking for more payloads, and I think they'll get them, John.
India's ISRO space agency is ready to test a man-rated solid rocket. Bob, are they going to the moon? What is the plan for a manned launch?
They have a planned manned orbital flight that they hope to do in 23. It's delayed a few years because of their panic over the Wuhan flu. They've been preparing for it, and they have successfully now tested both the engines on the main rocket as well as now a solid rocket strap-on booster engine. This is a rocket, the GSLV, that they've been using for several years, totally built in India. It's their most powerful rocket. But they wanted to upgrade the designs to man-rate them, to make them safer for putting humans on board. And so they've successfully done now tests to that, including the solid rocket strap-on booster. This means they are moving forward now, finally, we hope, towards their Gaganyaan manned mission. It'll orbit the Earth and then come back, and splash down. And they're targeting 23 for that mission, John.
And we go to the FAA at Huntsville, where Dream Chaser is headed. Why, Bob? What Dream Chaser is my favorite little mini shuttle.
Yep, Dream Chaser is the first Dream Chaser spacecraft. It's a cargo mini shuttle. It's called Tenacity. It's being built by Sierra Space. They hope to launch in the next year or so the first flight. They have now gotten permission from the FAA for future flights, as many as eight, to land at the Huntsville International Airport with Dream Chaser. This gives them flexibility. It also means they can bring it back. I think their manufacturing facility is in Huntsville, so they bring it back to where they manufacture it, which is a good deal. Since it does land on a runway, you can land on many different runways, but now they've got permission to land in Huntsville, John.
Bob Zimmerman, he keeps the website Behind the Black. Starbase, it's got a ring to it. Starbase in Boca Chica, Texas. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.